Rincewind and Twoflower lay in their separate cells and talked about the good old days. At least Twoflower talked about the good old days. Rincewind worked at a crack in the stone with a piece of straw, it being all he had to hand. It would take several thousand years to make any kind of impression, but that was no reason to give up. "Do we get fed in here?" he said, interrupting the flow of reminiscence.
"Oh, sometimes, but it's not like the marvellous food in Ankh Morpork."
"Really?" murmured Rincewind, scratching away. A tiny piece of mortar seemed ready to move.
"I'll always remember the taste of Mr. Dibbler's sausages."
"People do."
"A once-in-a-lifetime experience."
"Frequently." The straw broke.
"Damn and blast."
Rincewind sat back. "What's so important about the Red Army?" he said. "I mean, they're just a bunch of kids. Just a nuisance."
"Yes, I'm afraid things got rather confused," said Twoflower. Have you ever heard of the theory that history goes in cycles?"
"I saw a drawing in one of Leonard of Querm's notebooks," Rincewind began, trying again with another straw.
"No, I mean like a wheel spinning. If you stand in the same place, it all comes round again."
"Oh, that. Blast!"
"Well, a lot of people believe it here. They think history starts again every 3,000 years.
"Could be," said Rincewind, who was looking for another straw and wasn't really listening. Then the words sank in. 3,000 years? That's a bit short, isn't it? The whole thing? Stars and oceans and intelligent life evolving from arts graduates? That sort of thing?
"Oh, no, that's just stuff. Proper history started with the founding of the empire by one son Mira, the first emperor, and his servant, the Great Wizard. Just a legend, really. It's the sort of thing peasants believe. They look at something like the Great Wall and say that's such a marvellous thing it must have been built by magic. And the Red Army, what it probably was just a well-organised body of trained fighting men. The first real army, you see. All there was before was just undisciplined mobs. That's what it must have been. Not magical at all. The Great Wizard couldn't really have made... what the peasants believe is silly."
"Why? What do they believe?"
"They say the Great Wizard made the Earth come alive. When all the armies on the continent faced one sun mirror, the Great Wizard flew a kite."
"Sounds sensible to me," said Rincewind. "When there's a war around, take the day off. That's my motto."
"No, you don't understand. This was a special kite. It trapped the lightning in the sky, and the Great Wizard stored it in bottles and then took the mud itself and baked it with the lightning and made it into an army."
"Never heard of any spells for that."
"And they have funny ideas about reincarnation, too."
Rincewind conceded that they probably would. It probably whiled away those long water buffaloid hours. "Hey, after I die, I hope I come back as a man holding a water buffalo, but facing a different way."
No, said Twoflower. "They don't think you can come back at all. I'm not using the right words, am I? Bit corroded on this language. I mean, pre-incarnation. It's like reincarnation backwards. They think you're born before you die."
"Oh, really?" said Rincewind, scratching at the stones. "Amazing. Born before you die. Life before death. People will get really excited when they hear about that."
"No, that's not exactly... it's all tied in with ancestors. You should always venerate ancestors, because you might be them one day, and... Are you listening?"
The little piece of mortar fell away. Not bad for 10 minutes' work, thought Rincewind. Come the next ice age, we're out of here. It dawned on him that he was working on the wall that led to Twoflower's cell. Taking several thousand years to break into an adjoining cell could well be thought of as a waste of time. He started on a different wall. Scratch, scratch. There was a terrible scream. Scratch, 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 scratch.
"Sounds like the Emperor has woken up," said Twoflower's voice from the hole in the wall.
"That's kind of an early morning torture, is it?" said Rincewind. He started to hammer at the huge blocks with a piece of shattered stone.
"It's not really his fault. He just doesn't understand about people."
"Is that so?
You know how common kids go through a stage of pulling the wings off flies?"
"I never did," said Rincewind. "You can't trust flies. They may look small, but they can turn nasty."
"Kids generally, I mean."
"Yes. Well?"
"He is an emperor. No one ever dared tell him it was wrong. It's just a matter of, you know, scaling up. All the five families fight among themselves for the crown. He killed his nephew to become emperor. No one has ever told him that it's not right to keep killing people for fun. At least no one who has ever managed to get to the end of the first sentence. And the Hongs and the Fangs and the Tangs and the Sungs and the McSweeneys have been killing one another for thousands of years. It's all part of the royal succession.
McSweeneys?
Very old established family.
Rincewind nodded gloomily. It was probably like breeding horses. If you have a system where treacherous murderers tend to win, you end up breeding really treacherous murderers. You end up with a situation where it's dangerous to lean over a cradle. There was another scream. Rincewind started kicking at the stones. A key turned in the lock.
"Oh," said Twoflower.
But the door didn't open. Finally, Rincewind walked over and tried the big iron ring. The door swung outwards, but not too far, because the recumbent body of a guard makes an unusual but efficient doorstop. There was a whole ring of keys hanging from the one in the door. An inexperienced prisoner would simply have run for it. But Rincewind was a postgraduate student in the art of staying alive, and knew that in circumstances like these, much the best thing to do was let out every single prisoner, pat each one hurriedly on the back and say, "Quick, they're coming for you," and then go and sit somewhere nice and quiet until the pursuit had disappeared in the distance. He opened the door to Twoflower's cell first. The little man was skinnier and grubbier than he remembered, and had a wispy beard. But in one very significant way, he had the feature that Rincewind remembered so well. The big, beaming, trusting smile that suggested that anything bad currently happening to him was just some sort of laughable mistake and would be bound to be sorted out by reasonable people.
"Rincewind, it is you. I certainly never thought I'd see you again," he said.
"Yes, I thought something on those lines," said Rincewind. Twoflower looked past Rincewind at the fallen guard.
"Is he dead?"
he said, speaking of a man with a sword half buried in his back. "Extremely likely."
"Did you do that?"
"I was inside the cell."
"Amazing. Good trick."
Despite several years of exposure to the facts of the matter, Rincewind remembered Twoflower had never really wanted to grasp the fact that his companion had the magical abilities of the common housefly. It was useless to try and dissuade him. It just meant that modesty was added to the list of non-existent virtues. He tried some of the keys in other cell doors. Various raggedy people emerged, blinking in the slightly better light. One of them, turning his body slightly in order to get it through the door, was three yoked oxen. From the look of him, he'd been beaten up, but this might just have been someone's attempt to attract his attention.
"This is Rincewind," said Twoflower proudly, "the great wizard. Did you know he killed the guard from inside the cell?"
They politely inspected the corpse.
"I didn't, really," said Rincewind.
"And he's modest, too." "Long life to the people's endeavour," said three yoked oxen through rather swollen lips.
"Mine's a pint," said Rincewind. "Here's big fella keys belong door. You go letty people out e chop chop."
One of the freed prisoners limped to the end of the passage.
"There's a dead guard here," he said.
"It wasn't me," said Rincewind plaintively. "I mean, perhaps I wished they were dead, but..."
People edged away. You didn't want to be too close to anyone who could wish like that. If this had been Ankh Morpork, somebody would have said, "Oh, yeah, sure, he magically stabbed them in the back." But that was because people in Ankh Morpork knew Rincewind, and they knew that if a wizard really wanted you dead, you'd have no back left to stab. Three yoked oxen had been able to master the technical business of opening doors. More swung open.
"Lotus Blossom?" said Rincewind.
She clung to Oxen's arm and smiled at Rincewind. Other members of the cadre trooped out behind her. Then, to Rincewind's amazement, she looked at Twoflower, screamed, and threw her arms around his neck.
"Extended continuation to filial affection," chanted three yoked oxen.
"Close cover before striking," said Rincewind. "What exactly is happening?" A very small red soldier tugged at his robe.
"He is her daddy," it said.
"You never said you had children."
"I'm sure I did, often," said Twoflower, disentangling himself. "Anyway, it is allowed."
"You're married?"
"I was, yes. I'm sure I must have said."
"We were probably running away from something at the time. So there's a Mrs. Twoflower, is there?"
"There was for a while," said Twoflower, and for a moment an expression almost of anger distorted his preternaturally benign countenance. "Not, alas, any more." Rincewind looked away, because that was better than looking at Twoflower's face.
Butterfly had also emerged. She stood just outside the cell door, with her hands clasped in front of her, looking down demurely at her feet. Twoflower rushed over to her.
"Butterfly!"
Rincewind looked down at the rabbit clutcher. "She another daughter?" Pearl?
Yes.
The little man came towards Rincewind, dragging the girls.
"Have you met my daughters?" he said. "This is Rincewind, who..." "We have had the pleasure,"
said Butterfly gravely.
"How did you all get here?" said Rincewind.
"We fought as hard as we could," said Butterfly, "but there were simply too many of them."
"I hope you didn't try to grab their weapons," said Rincewind, as sarcastically as he dared.
Butterfly glared at him.
"Sorry," said Rincewind.
"Herb says it is the system that is to blame,"
said Lotus Blossom.
"I bet he's got a better system all worked out."
Rincewind looked at the throng of prisoners. "They usually have. Where is he, by the way?" The girls looked around.
"I don't see him here," said Lotus Blossom, "but I think that when the guards attacked us, he laid down his life for the cause."
"Why?"
"Because that's what he said we should do. I am ashamed that I did not, but they seem to want to capture us, not kill us."
"I did not see him," said Butterfly.
She and Rincewind exchanged a glance.
"I think perhaps he was not there." "You mean he had been caught already?"
said Lotus Blossom. Butterfly looked at Rincewind again. It occurred to him that whereas Lotus Blossom had inherited a two-flower view of the world, Butterfly must have taken after her mother. She thought more like Rincewind, i.e., the worst of everyone.
"Perhaps," she said.
"Make considerable sacrifice for the common good," said Three Yoked Oxen.
"There's one born every minute," said Rincewind absently.
Butterfly seemed to get a grip of herself.
"However," she said, "we must make the most of this opportunity."
Rincewind, who had been heading for the stairs, froze.
"Exactly what do you mean?" he said.
"Don't you see, we are at large in the Forbidden City."
"Not me," said Rincewind. "I've never been at large. I've always been at Hunched."
"The enemy brought us in here, and now we are free." "Thanks to the great wizard,"
said Lotus Blossom.
"And we must seize the day."
She picked up a sword from a stricken guard and waved it dramatically.
"We must storm the palace, just as Herb suggested."
"There's only 30 of you," said Rincewind. "You're not a storm, you're a shower."
"There are hardly any guards within the city itself," said Butterfly, "if we can overcome those around the Emperor's apartments."
"You'll be killed," said Rincewind. She turned on him.
"Then at least we shall have died for something." "Cleanse the state with the blood of the martyrs,"
rumbled Three Yoked Oxen.
Rincewind spun round and waved a finger under Three Yoked Oxen's nose, which was as high as he could reach.
"I'll bloody well thump you if you trot out something like that one more time," he shouted, and then grimaced at the realization that he had just threatened a man three times heavier than he was.
"Listen to me, will you?" he said, settling down a little. "I know about people who talk about suffering for the common good. It's never bloody them. When you hear a man shouting, 'Forward, brave comrades,' you'll see he's the one behind the bloody big rock and wearing the only really arrow-proof helmet. Understand?"
He stopped. The cadre were looking at him as if he were mad. He stared at their young, keen faces and felt very, very old.
"But there are causes worth dying for," said Butterfly.
"No, there aren't, because you've only got one life, but you can pick up another 5 causes on any street corner."
"Good grief! How can you live with a philosophy like that?"
Rincewind took a deep breath. "Continuously." 6 beneficent winds had thought it was a pretty good plan. The horrible old men were lost in the Forbidden City. Although they had a wiry look, rather like natural bonsai trees that had managed to flourish on a windswept cliff, they were nevertheless very old and not at all heavily armed. So he led them in the direction of the gymnasium. And when they were inside, he screamed for help at the top of his voice. To his amazement, they didn't turn and run.
"Can we kill him now?" said Truckle.
A couple of dozen muscular men had stopped pounding logs of wood and piles of bricks and were regarding them suspiciously.
"Got any ideas?"
said Cohen to Mr. Savaloy.
Oh, dear. They're so very tough-looking, aren't they? You can't think of anything civilised? No. It's over to you, I'm afraid.
Ah-ha! I've been waiting for this, said Caleb, pushing forward. Been practising every day, you know, with my big lump of teak.
These are ninjas, said Six Beneficent Winds proudly, as a couple of the men wandered towards the door and pulled it shut. The finest fighters in the world. Yield now.
That's interesting, said Cohen.
Here, you in the black pyjamas. Just got out of bed, have you? Who's the best out of all of you?
One of the men stared fixedly at Cohen and thrust out a hand at the nearest wall. It left a dent. Then he nodded at the tax gatherer.
What are these old fools you've brought us?
I think they're barbarian invaders, said the taxman. How did he know that?
Said Boy Willie.
We're wearing itchy trousers and eating with forks and everything.
The leading ninja sneered.
Heroic eunuchs, he said. Old men?
Who are you calling a eunuch? Cohen demanded.
Can I just show him what I've been practising with my lump of teak? Said Caleb, hopping arthritically from one foot to another.
The ninja eyed the slab of timber.
You could not make a dent on that old man, he said. You watch, said Caleb.
He held out the wood at arm's length, then he raised his other hand, grunting a little as it got past shoulder height.
You're watching this hand? You're watching this hand? He demanded. I am watching, said the ninja, trying not to laugh.
Good, said Caleb. He kicked the man squarely in the groin, and then, as he doubled up, hit him over the head with the teak.
"'Cause you should have been watching this foot!'
And that would have been all there was to it if there had only been one ninja. But there was a clatter of rice flails and an unsheathing of long, curved swords. The horde drew close together. Hamish pushed back his rug to reveal their armoury, although the collection of notched blades looked positively homely compared with the shiny toys ranged against them.
"'Teach, why don't you take Mr. Taxman over to the corner, out of harm's way?' said Genghis.
"'This is madness,' said Six Beneficent Winds. "'They're the finest fighters in the world, and you are just old men. Give in now, and I'll see if I can get you a rebate.'
"'Calm down, calm down,' said Mr. Savaloy. "'No one's going to get hurt. Metaphorically, at least.'
Genghis Cohen waved his sword a few times.
"'Okay, you lads,' he said. "'Give us your best ninji.'
Six Beneficent Winds looked on in horror as the horde squared up.
"'But it will be a terrible slaughter,' he said.
"'I'm afraid so,' said Mr. Savaloy.
He fished in his pockets for a bag of peppermints.
"'Who are these mad old men? What do they do?'
"'Barbarian heroing, generally,' said Mr. Savaloy. "'Rescuing princesses, robbing temples, fighting monsters, exploring ancient and terror-filled ruins, that sort of thing.'
"'But they look old enough to be dead. Why do they do it?'
Savaloy shrugged.
"'That's all they've ever done.'
A ninja somersaulted down the room, screaming, a sword in either hand. Cohen waited in an attitude rather similar to that of a baseball batter.
"'I wonder,' said Mr. Savaloy, "'if you've ever heard of the term evolution?'
The two met, the air blurred.
"'Or survival of the fittest,' said Mr. Savaloy.
The scream continued, but rather more urgently.
"'I didn't even see his sword move,'
whispered Six Beneficent Winds.
"'Yes, people often don't,' said Mr. Savaloy.
"'But they're so old.'
"'Indeed,' said the teacher, raising his voice above the screams. "'And of course this is true. They are very old barbarian heroes.'
The taxman stared.
"'Would you like a peppermint?'
said Mr. Savaloy, as Hamish's wheelchair thundered past in pursuit of a man with a broken sword and a pressing desire to stay alive.
You may find it helps if you are around the horde for any length of time.
The aroma from the proffered paper bag hit Six Beneficent Winds like a flamethrower.
How can you smell anything after eating those?
You can't, said Mr. Savaloy happily.
The taxman continued to stare. The fighting was a fast and furious affair, but somehow only on one side. The horde fought like you'd expect old men to fight, slowly and with care.
All the activity was on the part of the ninjas. But no matter how well flung the throwing star, or speedy the kick, the target was always, without any obvious effort, not there. "Since we have this moment to chat," said Mr. Savaloy, as something with a lot of blades hit the wall just above the taxman's head, "I wonder, could you tell me about the big hill just outside the city? It is quite a remarkable feature."
"What?" said Six Beneficent Winds distractedly.
"The big hill."
"You want to know about that now?"
"Geography is a little hobby of mine." Someone's ear hit Six Beneficent Winds on the ear.
What? We call it the big hill. Hey, look at what he's doing with his..."
"It seems remarkably regular. Is it a natural feature?"
"What? I don't know. They say it turned up thousands of years ago, during a terrible storm, when the first emperor died. He's going to be killed. He's going to be killed. How did he do that?"
Six Beneficent Winds suddenly remembered as a child playing Shibo Yang Kong San with his grandfather. The old man always won. No matter how carefully he'd assembled his strategy, he'd find Grandfather would place a tile quite innocently right in the crucial place just before he could make his big move. The ancestor had spent his whole life playing Shibo. The fight was just like that.
"Oh, my," he said.
"That's right," said Mr. Savaloy. "They've had a lifetime's experience of not dying. They've become very good at it."
"But why here? Why come here?"
"We're going to undertake a robbery," said Mr. Savaloy. Six Beneficent Winds nodded sagely. The wealth of the Forbidden City was legendary. Probably even blood-sucking ghosts had heard of it.
"The talking vase of Emperor Pjisu," he said.
"No."
"The jade head of Sung Tsuit Li?"
"No. Wrong track entirely, I'm afraid."
"Not the secret of how silk is made?"
"Good grief! Silkworms' bottoms! Everyone knows that. No, something rather more precious than that." Despite himself, Six Beneficent Winds was impressed. Apart from anything else, only seven ninjas were still standing, and Cohen was fencing with one of them while rolling a cigarette in the other hand. And Mr. Savaloy could see it dawning in the fat man's eyes. The same thing had happened to him. Cohen came into people's lives like a rogue planet into a peaceful solar system, and you felt yourself being dragged along simply because nothing like that would ever happen to you again. He himself had been peacefully hunting for fossils during the school holidays, when he'd more or less stumbled into the camp of those particular fossils called the Horde. They'd been quite friendly, because he had neither weapons nor money, and they'd taken to him because he knew things they didn't. And that had been it. He'd decided there and then. It must have been something in the air. His past life had suddenly unrolled behind him, and he couldn't remember a single day of it that had been any fun. And it had dawned on him that he could join the Horde, or go back to school, and pretty soon a limp handshake, a round of applause, and his pension. It was something about Cohen. Maybe it was what they called charisma. It overpowered even his normal smell of a goat that had just eaten curried asparagus. He did everything wrong. He cursed people, and used what Mr. Savaloy considered very offensive language to foreigners. He shouted terms that would have earned anyone else a free slit throat from a variety of interesting ethnic weapons. And he got away with it. Partly because it was clear that there was no actual malice there, but mainly because he was, well, Cohen. A sort of basic natural force on legs. It worked on everything. When he wasn't actually fighting them, he got on a lot better with trolls than did people who merely thought that trolls had rights, just like everyone else. Even the Horde, bloody-minded individualists to a man, fell for it. But Mr. Savaloy had also seen the aimlessness in their lives, and one night he'd brought the conversation round to the opportunities offered in the Orient. There was a light in Six Beneficent Winds' expression.
"Have you got an accountant?" he said.
"Well, no, as a matter of fact."
"Will this theft be treated as income or capital?"
"I haven't really thought of it like that. The Horde doesn't pay taxes."
"What? Not to anyone?"
No, it's funny, but they never seem to keep their money for long. It seems to disappear on drink and women and high living. I suppose from a heroing point of view, they may count as taxes. There was a pop as Six Beneficent Winds uncorked a small bottle of ink and licked his writing brush.
But those sort of things probably count as allowable expenses for the barbarian hero, he said. They are part of the job specification. And then, of course, there is wear and tear on weaponry, protective clothing. They could certainly claim for at least one new loincloth a year.
I don't think they've claimed for one per century.
And there's pensions, of course.
Ah, don't use that word. They think it's a dirty word. But in a way, that is what they're here for. This is their last adventure.
When they've stolen this very valuable thing that you won't tell me about...
That's right. You'd be very welcome to join us. You could, perhaps, be a barbarian... to push beans. A length of knotted string. Accountant. Have you ever killed anyone?
Not outright, but I've always thought you could do considerable damage with a well-placed final demand.
Mr. Savaloy beamed.
Ah, yes, he said. Civilization.
The last ninja was upright, but only just. Hamish had run his wheelchair over his foot. Mr. Savaloy patted the taxman's arm.
Excuse me, he said. I find I often have to intervene at this stage.
He padded over to the surviving man, who was looking around wildly. Six swords had become interlaced around his neck as though he'd taken part in a rather energetic folk dance.
Good morning, said Mr. Savaloy. I should just point out that Genghis here is, despite appearances, a remarkably honest man. He finds it hard to understand empty bravura. May I venture to suggest, therefore, that you refrain from phrases like, I would rather die than betray my emperor, or go ahead and do your worst, unless you really, really mean them. Should you wish for mercy, a simple hand signal will suffice. I strongly advise you not to attempt to nod.
The young man looked sideways at Cohen, who gave him an encouraging smile. Then he waved a hand quickly. The swords unwove. Truckle hit the ninja over the head with a club.
It's all right. You don't have to go on about it. I didn't kill him, he said sulkily.
Ow!
Boy Willie had been experimenting with a rice flail and had hit his own ear.
How'd they manage to fight with this rubbish? What?
These little hog's watch decoration thingies look the business, though, said Vincent, picking up a throwing star.
Ugh!
He sucked his fingers.
Useless foreign junk.
That bit where that lad sprang backwards right across the room with them axes in his hands was impressive, though.
Yeah.
You didn't ought to have stuck your sword out like that, I thought.
He's learned an important lesson.
It won't do him much good now where he's gone. What?
Six Beneficent Winds was half laughing, half shocked.
But I've seen these guards fight before, he said. They're invincible.
No one told us.
But you beat them all.
Yep.
And you're just eunuchs.
There was a scrape of steel. Six Beneficent Winds closed his eyes. He could feel metal touching his neck in at least five places.
Oh, there's that word again, said the voice of Cohen the Barbarian. But you're dressed as eunuchs,
murmured Six Beneficent Winds, trying not to swallow. Mr. Savaloy backed away, chuckling nervously.
You see, he said, speaking fast, you're too old to be taken for guards, and you don't look like bureaucrats, so I thought it would be a very good disguise to...
Eunuch! Roared Truckle. You mean people have been looking at me and thinking I mince around saying, Helluo Saltet?
Like many men whose testosterone had always sloshed out of their ears, the Horde had never fine-tuned their approach to the more complex areas of sexuality. A teacher to the core, Mr. Savaloy couldn't help correcting them, even at sword point.
That means the glutton dances, not, as you seem to think, Hello, Sailor, which is Heios Nauta, he said. And eunuchs don't say it, not as a matter of course. Look, it's an honour to be a eunuch in the Forbidden City. Many of them occupy very exalted positions in...
Then prepare yourself for high office, teacher, Truckle shouted.